Meditation, remember what happened yesterday?
Fight was just about to start.
Between?
Mushtika and Lord Bala and the other wrestler.
Krishna. What were the words they exchanged? Do you remember? Do you remember the words they exchanged?
About the equality of the opponents and who should fight with who.
Chanura told Krishna he's trying to make sure that he didn't try to escape him. So he said that we should all try to please the king. And who is the king? Or what does the king want? What will please him? He has heard about your abilities, your great strength. As coward boys, how you're always happy and you're so strong. So he wants to see you wrestle. So we should always try to please the king. He's the embodiment of all living entities. So Krishna replied to that, yes, it's true. We are also subjects of the king, even though a little indirectly, because we live in the forest and not living in Mathura, but still he's our king. So it's true that we should try and please the king. But wrestling should be done amongst equals. Yes, we fight in the fields, but who do we fight? We wrestle with our friends. We love to wrestle. We wrestle with our friends who are our own age, equal to us in strength. I don't think it would be good if we fight you. So he was telling him indirectly that if you know what's good for you, you won't engage in this fight. Mm-hmm. And Chanura, of course, was a very good demon and a Suric friends. So he replied, okay, Krishna, don't try and fool us. He didn't use those words. Well, don't fool us. We know that you're not an ordinary little boy. You just remember, you just killed an elephant as if it was play for you. A huge elephant who was as strong as 10,000 elephants. No, it behooves you to fight someone more of your... You shouldn't fight with people of your own age because they won't be of your strength. Therefore, you should fight with us, with me, the strongest of the wrestlers. And he was huge. These wrestlers are actually... We used to watch them on television when we were kids. And did you watch wrestlers on television when you were a kid? No.
No televisions in those days.
I thought you were gonna say there were no kids in those days.
Kids there are plenty, but no television.
Yeah, too many. And wrestlers there were plenty too. But there were old ones who were always big and fat. But some of them were really, really, really strong, muscle builders. And then you can imagine just a little boy in front of one of his huge behemoth wrestlers. And but Krishna was warning him. So he said, okay. So Mushtika Chanura said, okay, we should fight. And then we'll start reading from the Krishna book. After Kamsa's wrestlers expressed their determination, the Supreme Personality of Godhead the killer of Madhu, confronted Chanur, and Lord Balaram, the son of Rohini, confronted Mustika. So this first verse says, so Krishna made up his mind to accept the challenge, and of course at this time he knew he was going to kill him. Thinking with determination, Charchita Sankalpo, I will kill Chanura, Krishna, a person. So if Krishna makes that Sankalpa, I will kill somebody, then there's only one hope that that person has. What is that hope?
Surrender.
Yeah. Surrender to?
Death.
No. Krishna is the devotee. There's that story from the pastime when it's actually an incredible pastime in the Mahabharata of when the Kandhara forest was being burned to satisfy Indra, who was Arjuna's father. So part of the burning and fire was that no living entities should escape. Not only did the forest have to be burned, but also all the living entities had to be burned as well. So Arjuna and Krishna agreed to make this offering to Indra. And ultimately a few living entities escaped. But Arjuna and Krishna stood on either side, on all the sides of the forest, and any living entity who tried to escape, the birds or whatever, they would shoot them with their arrows, and they would just fall back into the fire and burn. So it was really a very grisly, horrible scene. But when Krishna does these things, somehow it's wonderful. His perspective is far different from ours, because we're in bodily concept of life. So one of the personages in the forest was this Maya Dhanava, and everyone was to be killed, but he took shelter of Arjuna, so Krishna spared him. And as in reciprocation, Maya Dhanava built the assembly hall for the Pandavas. That was quite wonderful, and it was so wonderful. Vishwakarma built the assembly hall for the built Dwarka and the assembly hall for the Yadus, and Maya Dhanava built the Hastinapur assembly hall for the Pandavas. And when Maya, it's important what Maya Dhanava did. Actually, we hear about it in a later chapter, in the 75th chapter, because he was a Dhanava. He was not on the side of Asuras, he was an Asura, basically. And the Asuras have one type of Avastu Shastra, and the Asuras have another type of Avastu Shastra. So in the Devata Vastu Shastra, one of the principles is that the center of a construction is the Brahmasthan, and there should be nothing there. Especially there shouldn't be any water. But Maya Dhanava placed water in the center, in the Brahmasthan of the assembly hall. So when at the time of the Radhasuya sacrifice, which is described in the 74th chapter, 10th canto, then right at that time, Duryodhana was quite friendly. Not friendly, but he had a reasonable relationship with the Pandavas. Well, can't really say reasonable either. But it was at least superficially all right. But at that time, which is described in the 75th chapter, while Duryodhana was because his own was walking in the assembly hall when he came to the Brahmastan. It appeared if it was solid, and he stepped in it and did the tricks in the construction of Maya Dhanava. And that's actually, there's a very interesting description in the comments of the Acharyas on this chapter. Simple, but interesting, and the verses are interesting. How Duryodhana couldn't figure out what was land and what was water anywhere practically, so sometimes he'd see something and he'd think, oh, now I understand it's water. So he'd lift up his dhoti and sort of tiptoe through it, and then it would be land. But especially this one time, he thought it was going to be solid land, the Brahmastan part, and it ended up being water. And he fell in to the water, and the queens laughed. They were up in like the balconies, and they laughed at him. And Yudhisthira understood this isn't appropriate. Of course, you can laugh at someone who makes a mistake, and especially a Kshatriya. A Kshatriya's false ego is bruised. And there's going to be a big problem. There'll be great revenge. So especially Draupadi laughed, and Duryodhana always had his eye on Draupadi, always, even during the Swayamvara ceremony of Draupadi, but she was won by Arjun. So in any case, Draupadi and the queens laughed, and Yudhisthira being he said, stop that. But then Krishna was there saying, no. He laughed more because he wanted something done with the insult to Duryodhana. He wanted the Kurukshetra war to become a result of this, because Krishna had to send him in this world to relieve the burden of the earth. And of the demoniac forces. So Duryodhana was part of that, and it's where his many allies and the armies are all going to be killed in just 18 days. So many millions of people were killed. So in any case, if Krishna makes a determination to kill you, it's not very easy to get out of that, because how could you stop him? How could you stop Krishna from doing what he wants to do? You can't. The only way you can stop him is to change what he wants to do, and how to do that is because he follows the lead of his devotee. So if his devotee shows compassion and mercy, Krishna follows. So Lord Balaram began to fight with Mushtika. Krishna and Chanur, then Balaram and Mushtika, locked themselves hand to hand. I think Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur said that Krishna, when they were fighting, he made a fist of all the fingers underneath, except the pinky. That is the angul, this little one. How do you call the little one?
In Punjabi they call it chichi.
Chichi, oh no. In Bengali there's something else, something angul. It's cute though. It's for talking to children, that type of talk, so yes. But so Krishna began to fight him, making a fist with all the fingers. It wasn't clear how to do it, but all the fingers tucked in, except the little chichi, the little finger over there. So it was such an awkward way of fighting. But since Krishna was fighting like that, Chanur also started fighting like that. So Krishna was he's always expert at doing Nur different things. Oh yeah, I'll read Vishnu's comment. Aratni, which means the fist, refers to making a fist with all the fingers except the little finger. Wrestling with such a pair of fists is very difficult and thus unheard of, whereas wrestling is generally done with open hands. Nevertheless, just as Krishna, I guess it's like this. No, it's hard to say because that one's not under. Nevertheless, just as Krishna invented new ways of playing on the flute, as stated, Venu Vadya Rudyani Shakti, he also fought in this novel way with great skill. Although Chanur experienced great difficulty with this, he accepted this style out of pride in his own ability as a heroic wrestler. So first they locked themselves hand to hand. So when Krishna does something, when Krishna acts his pastimes, he does them in such a unique way and with such style and with such boldness and flair. His dressings, his actions, his walking to the bow, breaking the bow and just walking out, everything is done in such a wonderful way. So Krishna and Chanur and then Balaram and Mastika locked themselves hand to hand, leg to leg, and began to press against the other with a view to come out victorious. They joined palm to palm, calf to calf, head to head, chest to chest, and began to strike each other, push each other, pull each other. The fighting increased as they pushed each other from one place to another. One captured the other and threw him down on the ground. Another rushed from the back of the rushed from the back to the front of another and tried to overcome him with a hold. The fighting increased step by step. It was picking up and dragging and pushing, and then the legs and hands were locked together. All the arts of wrestling were perfectly exhibited by the parties as each tried his best to defeat his opponent. So Krishna, of course, was playing and enjoying the sport. Because wrestling it's a very heavy sport, actually, and it's simultaneously subtle, and it requires great strength. It has very much to do with balance and keeping the weight of your body not getting off center. So the idea is the most important thing in one sense is the legs in wrestling, and that the legs have to be very, very centered and grounded. So there's much strength in the legs, and then you move forward and you fight with the arms, and with the strength of your arms, you have to push the person off center, off balance. That's the basic idea, and then you can, when someone's off balance, same thing in the martial arts, the Chinese martial arts. And if you watch actual wrestlers, it's just a matter of keeping your balance, your center of gravity very low, and then with the strength, and so your legs have to be strong, and then the strength of your arms, and then very quickly you move and throw them, and trip and this and that, but it has to do with that essential thing. So there's a great skill and talent in wrestling. So you start by just pushing your strength, and because what happens if you push very strongly and then he moves out of the way? Then he's off center, and then he can just pull you down. So it's very, very it's subtle. But if you don't push, if you don't push, then he'll just completely take over. So it's very, very subtle form of balance of the arts. So this verse over here says, they struck each other. They struck fist against fist, knees against knees, and head against head, and chest against chest, pushing. Each fighter contended with his opponent by dragging him about in circles, shoving and crushing him, grip, throwing him down, and running before him, behind him, in front of him, behind him. Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says, The word paribrahmana means grabbing the other by the hands and whirling him around. Vikshep means shoving. The word parirambha indicates crushing one's opponents with one's arms. Crush the air at him, etc. Avapatnai means throwing down the foe. Utsapana means releasing and running in front of the other. And aparsarpanai means going behind him. In this way, they counted each other's moves. So he's trying to get in front of you, you get behind him, etc. Forcefully lifting and carrying each other, pushing each other away and holding each other down. The fighters hurt even their own bodies in their great eagerness for victory. Because the one becomes very excited and all, and one gains more strength in human terms. The adrenaline starts moving through the body. And all one's consciousness becomes very focused only on one thing, victory. You have to really focus your consciousness in these things. Uttapanam means pressing together the knees and feet of a fallen opponent and picking him up. So you grab the knees, whirling him around, or picking him up, spinning him around. Chalanam means pushing away the opponent who is holding on to one's throat. At other times, they would fix themselves firmly so that the opponent could not move them. Thus attacking one another, they injured even their own bodies. Although Krishna and Balaram did not, of course, harm themselves, it appeared that way to the spectators. So that is from the spectator point of view. But the audience in the wrestling arena was not very much satisfied. Why?
Because fights were apparently not equal.
Yeah, exactly. The combatants did not appear to be equally matched. They considered Krishna and Balaram to be mere boys before Chanurmasti, who were the strongest wrestlers and were solid stone. Being compassionate and favoring Krishna and Balaram, but many ladies in the audience began to talk as follows. Dear friends, there is injustice here. This is what Krishna was saying before the wrestling match. He said that the audience isn't going to like it. So Krishna let it go on. He could have killed him, of course, immediately, but he let it go on for a while so that the wrestler would be turned. So the ladies, dear friends, there is injustice here. Another said, even in front of the king this wrestling is going on between incompatible sides. The ladies had lost their sense of enjoyment. They could not encourage the fighting between the strong and the weak. Mushtika and Chanur are just like thunderbolts as strong as great mountains, and Krishna and Balaram are two delicate boys of a very tender age. The principle of justice has already left this assembly. Persons who are aware of the civilized principles of justice will not remain to watch this unfair match. Those who take part in watching this wrestling match are not very much enlightened. Therefore, whether they speak or remain silent, they are being subjected to the reactions of sinful activities. So the point that's coming out is that if there's something, an unfit match means something irreligious. Because it's adamic. It is inappropriate. So, if to participate in something adamic causes sinful reactions. But not only to participate in it, but also to watch it and not protest and just accept it. One is implicated in sinful reactions in that way as well. So that's a very heavy point, actually. When something's inappropriate, one doesn't at least say something about it and voice one's objection to it. Then one is entangled and meshed in the complexities of reaction. The women discussed the unfairness of the match, is the comment of the Shri. between the strong Chanura and Mastika and the weak Krishna Balaram. The reason for this was their compassion, which was a symptom of their natural affection for Krishna. Because of that, they were unaware of Krishna and Balaram's superior strength. The woman said, "Alas, what a greatly irreligious act the members of this royal assembly are committing. As the king watches this fight between the strong and the weak, they also want to see it, the people." So, not actually only was the king watching, the people didn't have a true understanding of what was going on, these ladies. Because Kamsa had actually organized it from the very beginning just to kill Krishna. It wasn't a sportsman at all. So people want to see her, enthusiastic to see her, this wrestling match between, and this that's proceeding in this irreligious way. So here Vishwanath says, the discussion of the women is described in 10 verses, 7 to 16. If the king sees a fight between young boys and strong adults, he should stop it. When the spectators see that the king is watching, they follow suit and simply watch. The king desires to watch and they imitate him. So this is the result of bad association. Because naturally one imitates the king. I remember when we were growing up that in 1964, probably 60, maybe 64, 60. There was John F. Kennedy was inaugurated as the President of the United States, and then 62, and then at the inauguration, he didn't wear a hat. He was the first one to be a little, because it was more formal to wear a hat, but he didn't wear a hat. So when he didn't wear a hat, the sale of hats in the country dropped by a huge amount. And this is just because naturally one follows what the leader is doing. One should follow what the leader is doing, but the leaders, of course, should act in such a way that it's beneficial for people to follow them. One verse of the Bhagavad Gita.
Following
Lokas, the people. The people will naturally be following, so how important. The achar, yad, whatever. The acharity, sreshastha, that most people do. And the janaha will follow. What comparison can there be between these two professional wrestlers with limbs as strong as lightning bolts and bodies resembling mighty mountains, and these two young, immature boys with exceedingly tender limbs? While describing the soft bodies of Krishna and Balaram, the women pointed with their fingers. Religious principles have certainly been violated in this assembly. One should not remain even for a moment in a place where irreligion is flourishing. The women said, certainly there is irreligion, dharma vatikrama, the opposite of dharma, in this assembly, samadhasya, so that no one should stay here. Therefore, we should immediately leave this place. They continue. A wise person should not enter an assembly if he knows the participants there are committing acts of impropriety, and if having entered such an assembly, he fails to speak the truth, speaks falsely, or pleads ignorance, he will certainly incur sin. Another group of women spoke, quoting the rules of the scriptures. We have committed offenses by coming here. If someone knows that there is injustice in an assembly and remains silent, or else speaks contrary to irreligious principles, or acts as if to religious principles or acts as if ignoring ignorance, saying, I don't know, even though one does in fact know, in any of these cases he will certainly incur sin. Therefore, he should not enter the assembly. Good advice for him. This prohibition against entering the assembly is for the wise person who is concerned with worldly activities, but not for the wise person who is indifferent to such. For example, Mahabharata explains that during the gambling match, when Draupadi suffered her misfortune in the royal assembly, wise men such as Bhishma, who were concerned with royal worldly affairs, simply stood silently, whereas the learned Vidur, who was indifferent to ordinary affairs, exclaimed, "And you talk about religious duty?" Thus all the wise persons in the wrestling arena are afraid of Kamsa, because they are overly attached to worldly affairs. Everyone has a call. It is true. Almost everyone. But, my dear friends, another lady in the assembly spoke out, just look at the face of Krishna. There are drops of perspiration on his face from chasing his enemies, and his face appears like the lotus flower with drops of water. I'll read that again because it's quite a wonderful picture. But my dear friend, so in the midst of all this complaining about the irregularity of the wrestling match, the qualifications and size of the opponents, there was something else going on. They began to notice just how beautiful Krishna actually looked. So one lady said, "But my dear friend, just look at the face of Krishna. There are drops of perspiration on his face from chasing the enemy, and his face appears like the lotus flower with drops of water." Another lady said, "Don't you see how the face of Lord Balaram has turned especially beautiful? There's a reddish hue on his face, on his white face, because he's engaged in a strenuous wrestling match with Musti." Another lady in the assembly addressed a friend, "Dear friend, just imagine how fortunate." Okay, we'll read that in a moment. So here, just see how the face of Krishna, the lotus face of Krishna, as he darts around his foe, that face covered with drops of perspiration brought on by the strenuous fight resembles a lotus covered with dew. Krishna says, "But Krishna and Balaram do not appear to be fatigued. There is no fault in this match, since they are seen to be very strong." Anticipating such an objection, the Mathura ladies speak this verse. "See, due to being pursued here and there by his opponent, Krishna is showing fatigue, and he has perspiration all over his moon-like face." Vadra Ambuja means moon face, since the word Ambuja means lotus, moon, or kans. Later in the verse, Krishna's face is compared to a lotus. "Don't you see the face of Lord Balaram, with its eyes copper red from his anger towards Mustik, and his beauty enhanced by his laughter and his absorption in the fight?" He was laughing and fully absorbed. And then they began to... So in the midst of that, of their seeing the perspiration, seeing Krishna's, seeing fatigue in the fighting, they're also seeing the beauty of the Lord. And he's so beautiful. And everyone became completely captivated by his beauty. So now there's a discussion of Krishna's beauty. And therefore, because Krishna is so beautiful, this is the first time Krishna's been in Mathura for just a few days, and this is the first time so many of the Mathura Vasis have actually seen Krishna. So they're so thrilled on seeing Krishna, because, and Krishna's beauty is ever fresh, because even if you see him one time, you don't become tired of seeing him. You wish to see him again and again. So, therefore they're praising the fortune of the residents of Vrindavan, especially, the residents of Vrindavan, because they have the opportunity, to see Krishna day after day, month after month, year after year, for so many years. So they're just realizing what they've been missing out on. Another lady in the assembly addressed her friend, "Dear friend, just imagine how fortunate is the land of Vrindavan, where the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself is present, always decorated with flower garlands and engaged in tending cows along with his brother, Lord Balaram. He is always accompanied by his cowherd boyfriends, and he plays his transcendental flute. The residents of Vrindavan are fortunate to be able to constantly see the lotus feet of Krishna and Balaram, which are worshipped by great demigods like Lord Shiva and by the goddess of fortune. We cannot estimate how many pious activities were executed by the damsels of Brajabhumi, so that they were able to enjoy the Supreme Personality of Godhead by looking upon the unparalleled beauty of his transcendental body." So they're thinking, this is because, especially in the Veda conception, good comes to us and fortune comes to us when we've done pious activities, and misfortune and bad comes to us due to our sinful activities in the past, either in this life or in previous lives. So the greatest fortune, achanvantam phalamidam na param vidama, there is no greater fortune than the eyes become perfect when they are gazing directly at the all beautiful form and face, especially of Krishna. So therefore the ladies say how pious, just imagine how fortunate is the land of Vrindavan. They say how many, we cannot estimate how many pious activities the gopis were executed by the damsels of Brajabhumi, so that they were always able to enjoy the Supreme Personality of Godhead by looking upon his unparalleled beauty, the unparalleled beauty of his transcendental body. The beauty of the Lord, so here's some sentences discussing the beauty of the Lord. First, glorifying by saying that to see this beauty takes incredible piety. The beauty of the Lord is beyond compare. So how are they going to describe it? You can't compare anything to it. You can't say that it's as beautiful, Krishna's face is as beautiful as the moon. You can't say it's as beautiful as because when you describe something that's unknown, you have to describe it in relationship to the known. So the unknown is Krishna's beauty. So that which is known cannot be compared to Krishna's beauty. So they're gonna, so that's how they first, their first point of description is nothing parallels Krishna's beauty. The beauty of Krishna is beyond compare. No one is higher than or equal to him in beauty of complexion or bodily luster. So they're first describing his complexion and bodily luster. That's because that's the first thing when, that confronts one. we don't notice it so much in one sense, but if you go to if you just stay in Vrindavan for a while, or you stay here and then you go to an ordinary old place, even the airport or some shopping mall, and you see immediately what confronts you is first is the effulgence or the aura of the people. Maybe we don't think of it quite in those terms, but just that the atmosphere that they carry with them is not very effulgent because of their sinful activities. And their faces, of course, reflect this as well. So the first thing that the gopis, or these ladies, describe is the bodily luster of Krishna that is unequaled. So in a sinful place, people have very, very low bodily luster, very dark, very dark. And in a pious place where the mode of goodness is dominant and sinful activities are minimal, then the people's effulgence is far greater. But regardless of how great someone's personal effulgence is, no one is higher than or equal to him in beauty or of complexion, beauty of complexion or bodily luster. So, and Prabhupada used to say that he was very proud of that. He saw that when the young men and ladies, when they first came to him, they were dull in their luster, and later they became bright-faced. He mentioned that. But there's a certain charisma, and Krishna is the most charismatic. Krishna means power, basically. So first they discussed Krishna's effulgence or luster, and the beauty of Krishna is beyond compare. No one is higher than or equal to him in beauty of complexion or bodily luster. Krishna and Balaram are the reservoirs of all kinds of opulence, namely wealth, strength, beauty, fame, knowledge, and renunciation. So the gopis are so fortunate that they can see and think of Krishna 24 hours a day, beginning from their milking the cows or husking the paddy or churning the butter in the morning, while engaged in cleaning their houses and washing their floors. They are always absorbed in thoughts of Krishna. So this is such a great fortune, because they're seeing Krishna all the time, their mind becomes attracted to him, and therefore they're always absorbed in thoughts, seeing and thinking of him 24 hours a day, from the first thing they do in the morning to cleaning. First thing was milking the cows and churning the butter, then cleaning the houses and washing the floors. Simply, they're absorbed of Krishna. He has so much of an effect on their lives, they cannot push him out in any way from their thoughts. And this is something that when Uddhav delivered message from Krishna to the gopis, part of the message appeared to be saying that if you just meditate on me, you will be able to approach me. If you think of meditating me all the time, don't think I'm absent for you, but if you just by thinking of me, you'll be able to approach me in the uppercut level. And the gopis didn't appreciate that message, because they were thinking, they said, that you say you're trying to solve our problem by telling us to think about you, but that's specifically our problem, that we can't stop thinking about you. So what kind of advice, third class and fourth class advice, are you giving us that we should start to think about you. Our problem is that we can not for a moment stop thinking about you. So the next paragraph is very important. Let's see if we can read this as the final paragraph. We'll read that one tomorrow. The ladies of Braja are the most fortunate women, because with their minds fully attached to Krishna, their throats always choked up with tears, they constantly sing about him while milking the cows, winnowing grain, churning butter, gathering cow dung for fuel, riding on swings, taking care of their crying babies, sprinkling the ground with water, cleaning their houses, and so on. So these are the activities that the village ladies are always doing. They're always crying, and their throats are always choked up as they sing about him, while this is what their activities, external activities. So first it describes their internal activities, their internal consciousness. They're singing about him while milking the cows, they're winnowing the grain. What does winnowing the grain mean? Separating the husks from the inner part.
What they call it?
We have one.
Yeah.
Huh?
What do you call it?
A winnow.
What do you call it?
Is it my head?
Maybe. Do you know? Yeah. We call it charge.
You charge with your chichi?
Charge is more prevalent than chichi. Chichi is localized.
Yeah.
Husking, you know, grain mixed with straw has to be husked. The straw will fall off and the grain will remain.
Because it's heavy, heavy and light. So they winnow grain, they churn butter, they gather cow dung for fuel. This is what goes on in Vrindavan to this day. Riding on swings, taking care of their crying babies, sprinkling the ground with water, cleansing their houses, and so on. Whatever they're doing, they're always singing, chanting, thinking, remembering. Krishna and the Vraja Gopis were always doing that, and therefore tears would be coming from their eyes, and their voices would be choked up, their minds were fully attached to Krishna. By their exalted quality, by their exalted Krishna consciousness, they automatically acquire all desirable things. Okay, so we'll stop here. We'll read tomorrow. We'll shall read it. Comment to this and I'll check if I can get cool. So the ladies, the fighting is going on, and the ladies in ten verses are speaking about their reaction to the fighting, and what's happening is their consciousness is becoming absorbed in thoughts about Krishna and the fortune of the resident of Vrindavan. Because everyone has a definition of what they consider good fortune is. And when we see others have the fortune that we don't have, one become envious, one can become envious. But in any case, everyone defines what good fortune is. Everyone has their own standard and definition. So these ladies of Mathura were establishing quite a wonderful definition of what fortune is, and that is to be able to see the beauty of Krishna continuously. Okay.
Is the book in the translation of Vishwanath Chakravarti's commentaries?
Yeah. On the 10th canto.
On the 10th canto.
Yeah.
Who has translated?
Manu Swami.
He's the right person for this. He spent so much time on this.
Yeah, no. He's so fast, too. He's too fast. Quite an amazing person.
Yeah, he's completely dedicated to this.
You know, I knew him in Japan. He comes from, even though his family is Japanese, but he grew up in Vancouver, in Canada. So
it's not Japanese in essence.
Huh?
It gives him a lot of versatility, doesn't it?
So when we first met him in 1970 in Japan, he was there studying Japanese.
Mm-hmm.
And then so that was his tendency. He's studying language and translating and things. And then it just went like this. He found out what he was really supposed to be doing. That's because the consciousness Prabhupada captured him.
Empowered interpreter or translator.
Huh. Okay, Hare Krishna. Yes, he's taken his birth for this purpose only.
Yeah, it appears. I've seen him working in Chennai. It's not a home. He has computers and books, you know.
And the Veena.
Hmm?
Veena. Veena.
Veena. I don't know if he plays Veena. Yeah.
He plays Veena?
I've seen him in Chennai, exactly that name.
Yeah.
Maybe it was sitar or something.
Simple disposition, you know. Not ostentation or anything. Very subtle.
T-shirt sadhu. T-shirt sadhu.
Yeah, I have
a t-shirt. I always wear a t-shirt.
Bhaktivedi Purnamaraj is wooden shoes type.
It's okay.